Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
All my bets were safe. There just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
After about a week off, we are back here on the Behind the Bets podcast. I am Doug Kazarian. Last time we checked with you, we just kind of dipped our toe into all these bowls. Now it's go time. We mean business. John Murray's going to join us at the end of the podcast. Let us know what the sharp action has been at the Westgate Superbook from behind the counter. And then Phil Steele, who has watched every play of every bowl game so far this bowling season. He has four plays for us, and then obviously a breakdown of each of the national semifinal games. I'll weigh in on some of those as well. So lots to get through. First, Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to everyone. Thanks for tuning in. Kai, good to see you, bud. How was your Christmas?
Oh, man, good to see you too, Doug. It was great, man. Took the kids down the 30 Rock.
Okay.
Craziness, but well worth it.
So what was it, a weekend? When were you there?
I snuck down on a Friday, and I just got back. Like, me and you walked in the studio at the same time, I think, today.
Oh.
So, yeah, I had a good time, man, but I'm really excited to see this these semifinals. I think it's pretty evenly matched, I guess, as best as possible. And I'm looking forward to the breakdown from Phil because, like you said, he's watched every play of every bowl.
So you think they're evenly matched, even though we got double-digit spreads for each?
I think, yeah. I think from an excitement level, you know, just to see, you know, Notre Dame back right. And being in the semis, you know, it's been a while for them. And then, of course, you know, you got Alabama and Clemson in that rivalry, them going back and forth winning championships. And then, you know, with Oklahoma, they're back again. I think maybe on the numbers, it's a different story. But I think as far as the excitement level, I think it's going to be very engaging.
All right, so you got to play for us, or are we going to maybe get some plays at the end from you?
Oh, man, confessions of a non-gambler,
yeah,
pick of the
let's
week.
Get some square plays for you.
I promise you this. I'll have it for you. If people are still listening by the time we're done, I'll have a pick for them.
Okay.
That's the tease to listen to the whole podcast.
All right, we're looking forward to that. We're also looking forward to hearing from Phil and John. That's straight ahead here on the Behind the Bets podcast.
Stop. Hammer time.
It is hammer time. Phil, you've been handing out Christmas gifts like Santa Claus so far this bowl season. So I know our listeners appreciate the winners. And you had, what, 2-1 last week on the podcast with TCU and Army? TCU, we had to sweat a little bit, but Army was easy winner.
Yeah, the Army game went exactly as I thought it would, but just a total domination. And I like the fact that, you know, the one thing I always look for, Doug, is teams that they have less time off than the other ones. And when you have that big of an advantage, usually shows up on game day. So a nice win for the Army. And like you mentioned, the TCU-Cal game, were you sweating that field goal at the end in overtime?
That game literally had everything in it. It was so strange. Was it the SID who got a unsportsmanlike conduct sideline issue? What was that?
Running down the sidelines, he runs into the referee, and just amazing. I think that would have wiped out the touchdown had they scored and won the game, because they returned the ball all the way down the 11-yard line. Had they scored, they would have won in overtime. I think that would have wiped out the touchdown.
It would have.
And then so
that
is to start
that,
at your 40.
That was a live ball then, right? Like, that's a touchdown if it...
Yeah, it was definitely during the play. When the SID hit the referee, the player was on about the 40-yard line. What the hell is he running on the field for?
The get-back coach not doing his job. But then you had kickers alternating. I mean, it was just a straight, what was it, 9 turnovers?
9 interceptions.
9 interceptions.
You could call it the Cheese Int Bowl.
Wow. Well, yeah, and then we had the BC. BC that was canceled, which is just strange.
Yeah, and it's really, I mean, all these, and now BC's got to refund the tickets that they sold. The bowl's got to probably refund all its tickets, and I know there is lightning in the area, but I think Steve Adazio was definitely disappointed from his post-game press conference. Definitely disappointed that game is canceled. I usually count good plays, bad plays in my head. And I think there was 3 good plays for Boise. All the other plays were in Boston College's favor. I thought we were on the way to a nice, easy Boston College win, and unfortunately that thing got canceled.
What's to stop those two schools from just scheduling a game, like, I don't know, New Year's Eve at like 3 p.m.? I mean, seriously, that like, would be their seniors are really upset, and I sympathize with those guys. Basically, all those seniors. I mean, it's so rare that anyone makes it to the next level. Like, why not just go play a game? I said this last year with UCF. You know, why doesn't some team just go play Central Florida, like Alabama or someone like that? It, you know, whatever it may be. Maybe not Alabama's the best example, but some team like Oklahoma that lost in the national semis. Just go schedule a game and play and see what happens.
Yeah, what the heck? If you only controlled college football, Doug.
Well, they don't need college football's blessing. They can go play their own game and hire refs.
That's true.
ESPN would certainly foot the bill on the broadcast. Anyways, let's talk about games that are actually scheduled. So here we are, home stretch. Obviously, we have the national semifinals on Saturday, but plenty of other opportunities to make money. Let's start, I don't know, you like Virginia Tech plus 5.5 against Cincy. Now, this Bearcats team stormed out of the gates, really impressive this year. It all got a lot of people's attention, really, when they went to Pasadena in the opener and won and then started out hot. What was it, 6-0? Finally lost at Temple, then ripped off a few more wins. Nice season for the Bearcats, but you like the Hokies here.
Yeah, and, you know, I talked in depth this spring with Coach Bud Foster of Virginia Tech, and going through the team with them, you know, it was an extremely young defense, and it was an extremely thin defense that Virginia Tech had. And as I'm going position by position with them, when I finished going through every player that he had on the defense, I said, Coach, you know, there are inexperienced teams, and there are inexperienced teams. Every coach says we're inexperienced, we're young. I go, you are, and you got to stay healthy, my friend, because you've got like four guys that you can't afford to lose. Then they lose two cornerbacks during the summer. They lose two more starters during the season. And what happened? A Bud Foster defense did not look like a Bud Foster defense. They gave up 437 yards per game. They actually gave their opponents 55 yards per game, more than what their opponents came in averaging. But in going over every player with Coach Foster, he was really happy with the talent they had. So this was a very young, very inexperienced defense that had no just they got overwhelmed at times, like playing the option of Georgia Tech, giving up 465 yards rushing. But the one thing I can bank on is that Bud Foster is a hell of a defensive coordinator. And now he's had the entire season where these guys got to get their action in, and now he's got all the bowl practices. And what happened? They got to a record of 4-6. They needed to win their last two. Remember TCU last night? 4-6, need to win their last two games just to get to a bowl. They did. Now they need to win this game to avoid a losing season. I think Bud Foster's defense, which looked pretty good in the opener against Florida State, better than I expected, will play one of its better games of the year. Now, there's no doubt Cincy's got a heck of a defense, and if you base it on the season, Cincy should probably be favored by 14 points. But I'm banking on the fact Bud Foster get those young, talented defensive players playing their best game of the year. I like what they have on offense. I like Ryan Willis at QB and Stephen Peoples at running back. And so I think that Virginia Tech in need of a win here, plus the points, plus the 5.5, I think they can pull the outright upset.
Ooh, calling for the outright upset. That means...
So you're telling me there's a chance?
We have time for Bob Lee again. Appearance number two so far here on the pod, and we have many more to go. So you're taking the 5.5. Another game on New Year's Eve that you like is Oregon, with its quarterback making some news recently, laying 2.5.
Yeah, and you got to like that for Oregon, the little bounce they're going to have in their step, knowing that Justin Herbert's going to be coming back for next year. I think Herbert would have been either the first or second quarterback taken this year, so really an interesting decision. And this is a game where it's offense against defense, Doug. There is no doubt Michigan State has a better defense. They're much tougher against the run. They got the defensive line advantage. They accounted for 79 tackles for loss this year. They allowed 2.7 yards per carry. Their secondary is number 14 in the country in pass efficiency defense. So it's a very good Michigan State defense. But Oregon's actually not that far behind. They only allowed 3.8 yards per carry, and they're number 24 in my pass efficiency defense. Edge Michigan State, but offensively, large edge here goes to Oregon. You're looking at the two quarterbacks for Michigan State, Brian Lewerke and Rocky Lombardi. Now, Lombardi in this first game took over for Lewerke and led the team to a big win over Purdue. Everybody's like, hey, no problem. But then Lombardi sort of struggled down the stretch, only hit 44%. In fact, the two QBs combined for 11 touchdown passes, 13 interceptions this year. On the other side of the coin, you got the guy who would have been the first or second pick in the draft as a quarterback, a 28-8 ratio, Justin Herbert, large edge there. I like the run game for Oregon as well. With Vardell and Dye, I think they give it a little more explosiveness than does Hayward and Jefferson. In fact, Michigan State averages 3.5 yards per carry this year. Offensively, Felton Davis is out for Michigan State, so I take the receiving core of Oregon led by Dylan Mitchell. And I like the offensive line for Oregon as well. Better in the run game, 4.7 yards per carry, better protecting the quarterback. Special teams advantage sides with Oregon. They're closer definitely to the site, so they may have a crowd edge here. Schedule goes to Michigan State, but, I mean, you're only laying 2.5. I think Oregon's actually the better football team. It's always dangerous going against Mark D'Antonio, who's on a 4-1 run in bowl games, but I think Oregon gets it done, and they're pumped up by the fact Justin Herbert's returning.
I am ready to fade the Big Ten in this postseason, although I was very impressed with what Minnesota did to Georgia Tech. So maybe I'm a little gun-shy. Now it's one game, and obviously Georgia Tech's got that unique offense, and Minnesota had some time to prepare. So I'm very eager to see how Wisconsin fares against Miami, and then from there, because I think I said it on the last podcast, I believe I said it to you, I said the Big Ten's been sneaky awful this year. And again, that's really just where they've set the bar the last couple of years, given that Michigan and even Penn State was and Wisconsin were all in the national championship discussion. But this Badgers team has just taken a giant step back. So I wonder if there's some misleading stats throughout the conference there. So I'm eager to see how this plays out, at least the first couple opportunities to see the Big Ten on the field.
Yeah, and I agreed with you last week as well, Doug. I think everybody looks at the fact that the Big Ten had such a great bowl record, and now with Minnesota's win, you may actually get the benefit of a few more points. There may be people just wanting to ride the Big Ten train, and like I said, I think the Pac-12 may have a better-than-expected bowl season because they were so horrific last year, and then Cal goes ahead and loses yesterday that now people are going to be like, hey, let's fade the Pac-10, let's go with the Big Ten, and you might get a little bit of line value in there as well.
Yeah, I mean, but you can't put too much stock in overtime losses, right? I mean, these are coin flip games. It's really like that Minnesota win is obviously one-sided. But I wouldn't sneeze at the Cal or scoff at the Cal performance. I mean, granted, it was ugly on both sides, but losing in overtime, all right, that's a loss, but let's not get carried away and exaggerate it too much and count it the same as some other one-sided performances. All right, I fast-forwarded. Let's go back to on the schedule with, speaking of the Big Ten, Michigan and Florida. Now, we've talked about this game. This is on the 29th, so it's this Saturday. Gets things going in the morning ahead of the national semifinal games. Wolverines are laying about 5.5, 6.5, so there's a wide range there. Got up to 7 a couple weeks ago, in fact, when the lines were posted. And you like the over-under here, under 50.5.
Yeah, originally heading into the bowl season, Doug, I mean, Michigan had the best defense in the country. And then they got waxed by Ohio State, 62 points, 567 yards. Believe me, I said, I do not want to face Don Brown's defense after giving up that many points. They're going to be angry, they're going to be fierce, and they're going to be not wanting to give up an inch all game long. And then the bowl season rolls around, and they do lose a couple of key players on the defensive side, including Devin Bush at linebacker. They lose Higdon, their running back. They lose their defensive lineman, Gary, and they just lost an offensive lineman yesterday. So four starters sitting out the game for the NFL. And Florida's not a bad team. In fact, you know, when you look at Florida's defense, they may have the fastest defense in the entire SEC. They held opponents to 47 yards per game below their season average, Michigan to 160 below. And talent-wise, the two teams fairly close, but I think Michigan does have the best defense in the country. And then I take a look at the fact that neither offense has really overwhelmed me. Not only is Higdon missing the game for Michigan as well as an offensive lineman, but Felipe Franks, the one thing you want to do is control the turnovers. He did have a 23-6 ratio this year. I'm going to run a conservative game plan offensively. And then I looked at the factor, what happens when Michigan takes on a defense that's ranked in the top 25? Well, they only took on two of them all year. They gained 17 points and 21 points. And meanwhile, Florida took on four teams that were in the top 25 all year. They averaged 18 points per game. So I don't think either offense can have a great deal of success against two excellent defenses. And it's an angry Michigan defense. It's not going to be wanting to give up a point. The point total is inflated up to 50.5. Why? Because of that 62-39 score against Ohio State. I don't think it's going to happen here. It's not going to be quite TCU California, Doug, but I think it will be the lower
I don't think
scoring
anything's
going to
be that.
Yeah, it'll be a lower scoring of the big bowl games, I think. So I like under 50 and a half in that one.
Now, you and I have talked about this in the past. I've shared my philosophy. Like, if I like a game under in football, especially the NFL, I like the first half under. I start there just because I feel like teams are, I don't know, the first few rounds of a boxing match, probing a little bit, more reluctant to make a mistake. How do you feel about the first half under in this situation?
That makes a lot of sense because, you know, like I said, if I'm both offensive coordinators, my goal is not to give the other team the ball. So I'm going to run a rather conservative offense early on. You might think in the fourth quarter you have a shot at, hey, we're down, we got to win the game, we got to take some chances. So it makes a lot of sense. I clearly like the under. What is it, half of what the, is it like 25, Doug?
25 and a hook, depending on the shot.
Okay, yeah. Makes a lot of sense. I agree with that 100%.
You know, last time I said that, I think that was it was a game earlier this year, and it, the first half went
Army
over,
Navy.
No, it was.
Oh,
that too.
No, okay, gotcha.
It was like I think with Matt Eumanns was on the horn on the podcast, and I believe the first half went over, but the game stayed under. It was like just my luck. You know? I think it was a Michigan game. I think it was one of those early. Maybe it was Michigan Notre Dame even. You know, typically that's what I like to do. I'm not saying it wins necessarily all the time, but that's typically what I like to do. All right, so I went back in time a little bit. So that's this Saturday. We talked about two games on the 31st, New Year's Eve, and then you also like a game on the 1st, Iowa and Mississippi State. Now, we loved the Bulldogs in the Egg Bowl. We were all over them against Ole Miss. Different opponent here, Iowa, and the line is 7-43.
Yeah, and this is a game where, I tell you what, Doug, everybody that talks about this game, that I've heard talk about this game, has talked about the outstanding Mississippi State offense or defensive line,
sure,
which they should.
Sure,
Mississippi
yeah.
State has one of the best defensive lines in the entire country. You've got two of the premier players in college football on the defensive front, both guys All-American. But believe it or not, the defensive line for Mississippi State this year accounted for 19.5 sacks. Iowa's defensive line accounted for 28.5 sacks. If I'm the Iowa defensive line, I'm saying to myself, you know what? All the talk is about those guys over there, but we're pretty good. I mean, Mississippi State allowed 3 yards per carry, Iowa 3.2. The TFL's actually in favor of Iowa, so they're going to get a defensive line that'll get after you. Now, I like Mississippi State's linebackers and DBs, and I do think they have the better defense, but I think Iowa's defensive line is going to be the surprise of this game. If they can control Nick Fitzgerald and his runs and force him to throw the football, I think that Iowa's going to have a heck of a chance. And offensively, when you look at the two teams, I mean, Nate Stanley doesn't make a heck of a lot of mistakes. He's got a 23-9 ratio. They've got decent running backs. Now, Noah Fant's not going to play, but Hockenson was their top tight end anyway. He won the John Mackey Award. So this is a team where, you know, Ferentz is now it's his 16th bowl game. Meanwhile, for Mississippi State, they're coaching his first bowl game. And then the largest edge here is actually in the special teams category. I've got Iowa rated much higher in special teams. So add it all up, the underrated unit's going to be that Iowa defensive line, which nobody's talking about. I think they have a big game. You're getting 7. I think it'll be a defensive struggle. I'm taking the points in a tight ball game.
You know, it's funny. I really like this Mississippi State team because of that defense, and they really have the model some of like the Alabama teams with Jalen Hurts and some of the mediocre to above average quarterbacks where they just sort of suffocate you on D and then eventually get their points with just grinding out in short fields and winning the field position battle, because I don't think they're a dynamic offense. Like, quarterback runs a lot. I think they're fine. I think they play the field position. That's what they did with Ole Miss a little bit, right? And they got the turnovers. They shut them down because that defensive front was so dominant. So when they've played, I don't know, comparable opponents, it's been pretty tight games, right? Like, obviously they blow out some of the bad teams, but when they play teams of their, these are tight games. Like, they lost to Florida by a touchdown. They only beat Auburn by 2 touchdowns. Same with
lost LSU by 16.
Yeah, like, they kind of play these tight games when they face a team that's, you know, up to snuff.
Yeah, and everybody knows who Jeffrey Simmons is and Montez Sweat. Those are the guys that get all the accolades. But A.J. Epineza for Iowa's got 9.5 sacks. Anthony Nelson, a defensive end, he's got 9.5 sacks this year. And they got two guys in the middle, Matt Nelson and Cedric Lattimore. They're extremely tough against the run. They also have a fifth defensive end, Parker Hess, that added 4 sacks. So they've got a pretty dangerous defensive line on Iowa's side. But nobody's heard of those names. You only hear about Sweat and Simmons right now. And if I'm an Iowa defensive lineman, I got a little extra edge on me this game.
Okay. All right. So that covers your 4 official plays. We got under Michigan and Florida, 50.5, Virginia Tech, not Va Tech. I learned that doing a broadcast. They don't like Va Tech. Virginia Tech plus 5.5, Oregon minus 2.5, and Iowa plus the full 7 against Mississippi State. So let's talk about the national semifinals. You've hinted that you like Notre Dame. You were waiting for the line to go up. It did. So it's at, I believe, where are we sitting? 13 now, for the most part. Although with that, let's just, we're thinking maybe Lawrence is out, but it's probably going to stay 13, right?
Yeah, it should stay 13.
Okay. So 13, are you waiting for the Irish to go up? Or are you going to jump on plus 13? Where do you stand now?
I still think the line could move up, but I'm going to play the Irish take them at 13. I think that when you look at Notre Dame, the thing I like about the Irish is that they are really a complete team. I mean, they can run the football with Dexter Williams. Remember, he missed the first 4 games of the year, still rushed for 941 yards, 6.6 yards per carry. We saw Clemson's last game. They give up some big-time passing yards to South Carolina and Bentley. Now they're taking on Ian Book, who's hitting 70% of his passes with a 19-6 ratio. So he's a pretty good passing quarterback, and I think he will be able to throw the football a little bit on Clemson's defense. Clemson, remember earlier in the year when they played Texas A&M and Kellen Mond, they gave up 430 yards in that game passing the ball. So I like the fact that Notre Dame's balanced enough to have that shot. And then defensively, Notre Dame's tough against the run. They give up 3.7 yards per carry. They've got it tough against the pass. They have number 4 rated secondary in the country in the pass efficiency defense. 7 touchdown passes all year, and they've given up 12, or they've had 12 interceptions. So that's nice there. And special teams edge, I give it to Notre Dame as well. So you have a very good Clemson team, one that blew out their opponents down the stretch. But I think Notre Dame has the capability of hanging with them. They are a complete team, and everybody's expecting that Notre Dame-Alabama game from the championship a few years back where Notre Dame was undefeated and then got blown out. But this is a different Notre Dame team than played in that game, and I think they really are a complete team. So I'm going to take the points in that one.
But it's not just that game that is sort of stuck in people's head. I believe Notre Dame's 0-5 in BCS title games / I think New Year's Six Bowls, and they've all lost all games by double digits. So some people perceive the Irish as kind of getting there on brand in the past. Obviously, they're undefeated, and they've had some quality wins, including Michigan. But is there a component, that a potential for fool's gold here?
The potential's there, but I really think they are a complete team. And I think they enjoy the fact that they're a large underdog and nobody gives them a chance. And if one of the two teams is going to be playing tight, yeah, I think it's going to be Clemson because, Notre Dame's got nothing to lose. Nobody's giving them a chance.
Yeah, I've just been really impressed with this Clemson team, particularly since they made the quarterback switch. Although that's a lot of points. It's a lot of points. We saw that last year with Oklahoma and Georgia, right?
Obviously,
right. It was a close game. And even the Alabama-Clemson game became a blowout because Clemson couldn't do anything. So I lean Clemson, but I'm not going to play it myself. What about the other national semifinal game?
Well, everybody's expecting points, and the total's up there. Well, an Alabama game at 77 points, pretty remarkable. I remember earlier in the year they had a high total on the Ole Miss game, and that thing sure looked like it was going to fly over the total. The game was 62-7 at the half and then didn't go over the total. But for some reason, I think that Alabama wouldn't put their offense away this time, even if they had a good-sized lead against Oklahoma. I think you have two of the most dynamic offenses in the country. It's my number 1, number 3 offense going against each other. Alabama's offense gets 155 yards above what teams average. Oklahoma's 196. They both have offensive lines that were finalists for the Joe Moore Award. I'm on a conference call with these Joe Moore guys. I'm a member of the voting committee. They are two of the best offensive lines in the country. You've got two of the best quarterbacks in the country. You've got great sets of running backs both sides of the ball, and it's dangerous receivers. So the offenses are there for both sides. We should see some points. Now, defensively, completely different. Oklahoma's defense has trouble getting pressure on the quarterback, only 28 sacks all year. They actually allow opponents 31 yards above their season average. So you come in averaging 400 yards per game, they'll give you 431. Meanwhile, Alabama's defense is one of the best in the country. You come in averaging 400 yards per game, you get 269 against them. They hold you to 131 below your season average. Tougher against the run. They get pressure on the quarterback with 42 sacks. So you have a legitimate defense on one side of the ball. I think Alabama in the last game against Georgia, they knew that they could lose the game to Georgia and they'd still make the playoff. Georgia had to win that game. This one, I think you'll see Alabama, off of that poor performance, play better this time against Oklahoma. And a massive defensive edge. I believe, Doug, you like Alabama's offense to score points in this game. I believe that's your favorite plan, and I have to agree with that. I think Bama scores early and often in this one. I actually lean with the Tide laying the 14 just because of the massive edge on defense.
Yeah, the team total was my favorite play. I'm a little worried about the layoff and a little rust and maybe Alabama not trying to get into a shootout. But then again, they do have Tua. I mean, he says 80%. We can't assume that's exactly accurate, right? Like, we don't know. Just feel like this Oklahoma defense, and you mentioned it with the yards allowed above season averages entering the game. I just think it's atrocious. And while Alabama's D is not the same in years past, it's still Alabama. They got players, and I kind of laugh at the fact that people are like, oh, Oklahoma showed their defense is capable of playing in the national semifinal by taking care of getting a few punts from Texas. Like, banged up quarterback. Texas isn't very good on offense. Like, some of the throws are just, like, out of bounds. Like, it was not a great defensive effort. All of a sudden, OU's figured it out with the new defensive coordinator. I just think there's going to be a lot of points here from Alabama.
Yeah, and I would agree with you 100% there. And what is your total on that?
So it's going to be around, well, the total for the game is 77.5. So what you do is you divide it by two, that's 39, and then you add and subtract, depending on the
14.
Favorite, half of the spread, right? So it's 46 to 32. Right, so 46 to 32, yep. Seven up, seven down. So 46 to 32, give or take a half point here and there on a team total. So you're telling me, I think Bama can get seven touchdowns.
Yeah, 49 points.
Three quarters, yeah.
Yeah, let's see. And they've been playing three quarters all year, getting 49 points easy. And, I would take Bama over 49. And I think, like you said, the number will probably be less than that.
Yeah, I mean, for those saying, like, wow, that's a lot of points against a Power 5 champ like Oklahoma, but their offense is the reason they won their conference, not their defense. And, look, there could be some ball control drives, maybe to his ankle. Maybe he does tend to force some throws here and there. But I just don't see Alabama only putting up like 30 points. So we're looking at 40-ish, and I think it could be 60.
Yeah, Kansas got 40 on them. Third last game of the season.
I mean, so Oklahoma got the fortunate cover against Texas. Let's call it fortunate, right? They were losing at one point. In the second half, if I'm not mistaken, they were definitely losing the second quarter. And then they got the cover on third down with Murray threw a beautiful pass, and they got the fortunate cover. Other than that, they went 0-3-1 the previous four games, giving up 40 in each of those. So they gave up at least 40 points in four straight games, first team ever to do that, and get wins in all four games. So I don't know, man. Like, I just don't see this defense doing anything to an Alabama offense.
Yeah, an average of 48 points per game. And those were not Alabama's offenses that they were taking on. They were good offenses, with the exception of Kansas. But, Alabama's got an offense that was deemed unstoppable at the start of the year.
And to your point, I don't think they're going to take the foot off the gas because of the capabilities of Oklahoma's offense. And
yeah,
I don't think Saban's going to mess around this time. I mean, maybe Hurts plays a little bit if they're up 21 in the fourth. But I still think they're going to be moving, and they can run all – you can run all day on these guys, so – look, if I lose a bet, I lose a bet. That's one thing about gambling is you can't be afraid to lose a bet. So I just really like it. I'm going to play it. By the way, you piqued my interest. You said that this matchup was 1 versus 3 in terms of offense ranked. What's number 2?
Ohio State.
Okay. Just curious.
Yeah, when you look at the Buckeyes this year, they're actually averaging 170 yards above what their opponents come in allowing. The Michigan game helped them out greatly. You know, that was 332 yards above what Michigan allows on the year. But it's been the case all season long. These guys put up big yards. They don't, you know, you look at their run game, they've got Dobbins and Weber, and it wasn't quite the year you expected. But those two guys combined for nearly 2,000 yards. And yet it's just been a disappointing year for Ohio State because they're not blowing teams out on a weekly basis. But their offense, 170 yards above what their opponents come in allowing.
We're seeing a line move here, and I'm annoyed because I really liked it at 7. It's now pretty much consensus 7.5. LSU against Central Florida. How do you feel about that?
LSU's missing a couple of key players. They're missing two of their top two cornerbacks. But well, when I broke this one down, Doug, I go through every position and line up players next to each other, and you know which one would I choose, and how much of an edge do I give? Yeah, I got check marks down the line for LSU. In fact, I don't know if UCF's got starters that would start for LSU. It's just that type of thing. Now, UCF's a good football team, great story, but LSU's taken on tons better competition. They've taken on, you know, the SEC caliber teams on a yearly basis. And then you come in thinking to yourself, you know, LSU's a defensive team. They don't really blow teams out, so can they cover that 7.5? But they took on a Mississippi team that's, you know, no defense, all offense, and they beat them 45-16. They beat Georgia by 20 points, for crying out loud. They led Miami of Florida 33-3 in the fourth quarter, and this was an LSU team you didn't expect much from. UCF has my number 72-ranked defense. LSU is number 8. Nice edge there. How about special teams? I've got LSU at number 29. I've got UCF at number 90. So you've got the special teams edge, more talent at every single position. And if you watch the SEC Network, they're basically begging LSU to win this game because all they've heard is how UCF beat Auburn last year. So unlike the fact that, you know, in the last 5 years, the Group of Five team has won 4 times outright, I think this time LSU comes in highly motivated to win this game rather than, oh, it's just a game, we're only playing a Group of Five team. Ed Orgeron, I think, will have this LSU team ready to go. And if that's the case, they have the talent edge. And like I said, you might get a little scared at that 7.5, but I don't think it's going to be a factor when the game ends.
This, we talked about it with John Murray of the Westgate Superbook, who's coming up here later on the podcast, just how this had all the makings of a square dog, right? The public overwhelmingly supporting an underdog, which is so rare, given what Central Florida did last year to Auburn. And now that line's going up, I can see come kickoff, like people getting really behind the Knights, and just give me the Tigers all day in this one.
Yeah, I agree with you 100% there, Doug.
Okay, bud. I think my other favorite, it looks like a square play, but I sort of hinted that Texas is not that impressive. I think Georgia, we talk about like, oh, Georgia won't want to play in that game. I think some of that, I don't know, bitterness, for lack of a better word, wears off by kickoff on the first at 8:45 p.m. at night. I think Georgia can open up a can on Texas.
Now that one, I'm actually leaning the other way. I like Texas plus the points, and you know this is one of those games where when I broke down the two teams side by side, you look at the defensive lines. I actually give Texas a little edge on the defensive line. Their D line kind of for 30 sacks, more than Georgia's defensive line did this year. The Texas linebacker tacklers are number 1, 2, and 3 on the team. An advantage there. The secondary, I give the advantage to Georgia. Running game, definitely Georgia's advantage, but I like little Jordan Humphrey and Colin Johnson at receiver. And this is a Texas defense that slowed down Oklahoma quite a bit in that game. And then you take a look at the fact how Tom Terman does as an underdog, you know, 12-3 against the spread as a dog, 10 of them outright wins. And I didn't see that much of a talent difference between the two teams. I got them by Georgia. Yeah, I got Georgia the better team, but probably by a touchdown or less. So I'm leaning with taking the points in that one. We'll have to put a little wager on that one, Doug.
Okay. All right. Pizza and beer or something like that. That's fair.
Yeah.
No, look, I do like Texas's defense, especially the front, like you mentioned. I just don't think their offense can get much done. I've just been unimpressed with their offense. And I don't know. I very easily could be wrong. Again, you can't be afraid in these situations. We're going to see a lot of other action from the conference. We saw TCU, although, you know, TCU's a defensive team. It's going to be interesting to see what else happens in the I'll formulate my opinion. I like Syracuse, too. against West Virginia without Will Grier. How do you feel?
Yeah, and I think that is a key. Now, last year when those West Virginia went to the bowl game without Will Grier, they had a I think he was like a 6 foot, basically a walk-on quarterback starting for him, and he struggled. And West Virginia had a horrific mm-hmm. game. This year they got Jack Allison, who's actually a very highly touted quarterback. I think he's 6'6", strong arm, but he's only had 10 passes all year. He should have some success finding Jennings and Sills, but I do think without Will Grier, West Virginia probably has a different offense. Not quite as drastic a drop-off as last year, but a drop-off. And you have to be impressed with what you've seen from Syracuse in each and every game this year. I love what they did when they went into Clemson. They're a team that just has had a chip on their shoulder. Remember how they didn't want to just beat Florida State. They wanted to pound Florida State, and they did that. And then they showed with the win over NC State that they were good. The Notre Dame game was their one truly bad game of the year. Other than that, they really didn't have a bad game. And I think Eric Dungy gives them a threat. He's 17-7 ratio, can also run the ball. And they can get after the quarterback as well. 38 sacks, so I think Jack Allison will be under some pressure. Although two defensive linemen are going to be missing the game for Syracuse. I believe one of them had 10 sacks, so that might hurt the pressure a little bit. But, yeah, I like Syracuse in that one, too. And I believe they have gone from being about a six-point dog to being favored because of Will Grier being out.
Yeah, I think it was even 7 at one point, but 6.5 for the most part. And then, you're right, it's crazy. And that's the thing. It's not just Will Grier being out, but I do like the Syracuse team. I've backed them a lot this college football season on my SportsCenter picks. So those are my plays that I'm leaning for. I've gone 2-1 so far on my SportsCenter plays in this bowl season.
Nice. What are you using this week, Douglas?
Well, I had to give out 3 this morning, which I wasn't happy about, but, you know, I was pushing for maybe 1 or 2.
That's right. Protect that record, buddy.
I know, and, you know, I went with Temple. I went against the sharps with you. I do like Miami, and now the number's 2.5. And
okay.
I went with the over on Vanderbilt and Baylor, 55.5. How do you feel about those 3? Because this, I mean, our listeners are going to be listening to some of these games are going to be over by then.
Well, Temple and Duke, if you go to my bowl confidence contest,
mm-hmm.
I've got that down to 2.
Okay.
So I can make a case for Cutcliffe and Temple losing their coach, but Temple's been the better team. I don't know. I have no clue about that. I'm passing on that.
Yeah, I said this was a gut call. Like, I didn't have any stats. I just said Duke is really unreliable this year. They've been impressive in some wins, been really bad losses.
Horrific.
I just trust Temple's defense more than any unit in this game, and I think their quarterback's much better than advertised. I thought he outplayed UCF in the quarterback that Thursday night game.
Yes.
Milton, he outplayed him, even though they lost by double digits. Fluky cover for Knights. I was on UCF, in fact, in that game. But I
can't believe that they covered that game.
It's just a gut call that I think Temple's the right side here.
You know, and the amazing thing is, coming into the year, Frank Nuttall was supposed to be the savior, and Anthony Russo's actually been the quarterback doing it. And like you said, I think he did outplay Milton. But that one, I'm just sort of going to watch the game because I've watched every play of every bowl game so far, so I will watch the game top to bottom, but really don't have a rooting interest. I guess now I do have a rooting interest.
You do.
I'm going for Temple, huh? I do like Miami. We've discussed that in the past. I like the way that they'll be able to take away the run in this one. And the Vanderbilt-Baylor over makes a lot of sense because, you know, you look at Vanderbilt, and the thing I like about them is at running back Vaughn, the Illinois transfer. When he's on the field, this guy's been unstoppable. He's averaging 7 yards per carry, and Keshawn Vaughn's there. They've got Kyle Shermer. Lipscomb is a guy that can go up and get the ball, and Pinckney gives you that breakaway threat at receiver. So they've got the offensive weapons at Vanderbilt. They do not have an overwhelming defense. In fact, they're one of the teams that give opponents more than what they come in averaging. And when you look at Baylor, you think offense with Baylor, and they've got a quarterback, you know, and Charlie Brewer, who's I thought got better as the season went on, and they were able to put some points up. So I would have to agree. I would slant towards the over in that game.
Yeah, both defenses statistically really bad, and Baylor's offense not against the best Big 12 defenses like TCU and Iowa State, but did do just fine against some of the bad defenses. So I think
they made you pick all 3 games today, Doug.
Hey man, they're cutthroat here at SportsCenter, right? I usually push back a little bit, and I did a little bit, but I was like, hey, if you want me to, you know, that kind of thing, because I'm not on tomorrow. I kind of wanted to give out Syracuse, but they said, just pick all 3 games. And they don't know, you know, it's like I'm talking to a producer who doesn't really appreciate the preserving the record and things like that. They just want to play. My fantasy advice, you know, just tell me, you know, give me your pick and don't want a formal pick. So I was like, can we do a non-formal because I want to protect the record? And they just look at me funny. I'm like, all right, whatever. I just, if I can go 2-1, it's great.
Yeah, well, I'll be rooting for you on that because it's been a hell of a run for you this year.
Yeah, with the bowl picks, I'm 30-13. So,
wow,
but nice. That hey, look, it's collaborative. I'm a very good it's aggregation, and I think you should get a lot of credit for that. You've helped me flush out a lot of picks here. So it all starts here. This is behind the scenes. This is where it starts, right here on the podcast.
That's I appreciate that, Doug. Really do, and it's always a lot of fun chatting with you, and you have a unique outlook when it comes to the game sometimes.
Why is that? Just degenerate?
Some of the halftime.
Yeah, there you go. Know, that's what I'm saying.
Things I never look at, you know, and I'm like, you know what? I have to start looking at that stuff because it's something I never – I always usually just go by the game or the total, you know, and you come up with some good ones.
Yeah, team totals I'm big on. Live betting I'm big on. Like that, I cannot stress enough that I always consider the closing line as the first time out. So just don't be married to that. Watch the game. Get a feel. Like I told you, I jumped in on BC after the first touchdown and maybe even a punt as well. I was like, all right, this one's going to be one side. And then, of course, the weather delay nullified everything. I just jumped in because I liked BC going in, and then I saw what I needed to see.
Yeah, and like I said, I count good plays, bad plays in my head, and I think we had three good plays for Boise in the entire span. Two passes they connected on, and one run for 0 yards. Other than that, every play was Boston College, and then I'm like, okay, this thing is going to be like 34-6, and then the doggone thing gets called off, and I get nothing for it. Nothing, Doug.
all that work, but it's never happened before, so it was history made. You have a story to tell the grandkids.
There you go.
All right, bud. Well, I appreciate the hard work, the insight, everything. It's been awesome. And I'm sure we'll get you back here on the podcast soon enough.
All right. Sounds good, Doug. Looking forward to it, my friend.
You got it. Happy New Year. Thank you. I appreciate that. Happy New Year to you, Phil.
Happy New Year, Doug.
All right. That does it for Phil Steele portion. Coming up, Mr. Director John Murray of the Westgate Superbook is going to tell us what the sharp action is for all these bowl games as we approach the new year and obviously the national semifinal game. So John Murray coming up, but first, a word from one of our sponsors.
He started as a ticket writer.
Well, the handle has gotten a lot higher here in the last hour.
Now he's a race and sportsbook director.
I have the guys at work here calling me Mr. Director and not looking directly into my eyes.
With people.
Brought in a whole new staff this year. It's kind of a Seinfeld-esque move where we just rotate the guys so the material doesn't get stale, Doug.
What happened in between? A hot tub and ESPN.
Kicking is for losers.
Yes, it is. Mr. Director John Murray of the Westgate Superbook back here on the Behind the Bets podcast. How are you, my man?
Good. How are you guys doing today?
Doing well. Merry Christmas. Pit stop back home. What was it? There 36 hours? How was that?
Yeah, I took the red eye Sunday night after work, and then I flew back here on Christmas night. So I was there for, like a day and a half.
Ah, solid.
It was good.
Solid. What did you arrive through the chimney? Is that what we're talking about here?
Oh, man. It was a whirlwind trip, but I got to see everybody, and I managed to, even though I was only there for about 30 hours, I still managed to sleep for about 15 of the 30, so
okay.
It was good. I needed that.
Solid. I take it you saw the Prince of Props, which we will discuss on the next NFL podcast. No, no?
Unfortunately, no. He was with he was with his family. I was with my family. There was only time for family on such a short trip, but hopefully I'll see him soon. Some chatter of him coming out here in March for the Pac-12 tournament. He's an Arizona State grad.
So family includes the family dog, which I saw on Snapchat. Good to see you. Yeah. Is that a puggle? What do we got there?
Just a regular purebred pug. Okay. But it's always good to see him. He's 16 years old now, so it takes him a while to realize that I'm there. But once it finally occurs to him what's going on, he gets very excited. So it's fun to see him.
That's very cute. What's his name?
LeVar, named after the great LeVar Arrington. That's how old he is. You know, it's funny, when my brother was working for the Redskins, he showed LeVar Arrington a picture of our dog, and he said LeVar Arrington just burst out laughing because he thought it was going to be this big, ferocious dog, and it was this tiny old man dog, and LeVar Arrington said it made him feel old because when we got him, LeVar Arrington was the best player on the Redskins.
That's great. I occasionally dog sit for a puggle in New York. My buddy, actually my brother's a good friend, but he's really all of our friends, all of my brothers and stuff. But I love the dog. I took to him. He's not the most attractive dog, and he's got an underbite, and he's just, I just love him. And I took him for walks, and there was a gentleman walking either his grandson, you know, a nice day out, and he's like, hey, little Johnny. He's like, look at that old, nice old dog over there. And then the guy goes, how old is he? I'm like, 6. he's like grayish and like underbite, all slow walking. And
those are 6 hard years, man.
Yeah. You know, in New York City living, you know, concrete jungle, yeah, late nights, sure, you know?
Sure, sure.
Yeah, hard living Big Apple.
Our dog is so old now that when I can get him out on a walk, even if he's just spinning his tires and going in circles, I just let him go. I figure it's good for him. I was like, just keep going, buddy. And he just walks around in circles because he can't figure out where he is. But I figure it's good for him no matter where he's walking, even if it isn't very productive.
Well, and then we're going to transition from a similar feeling I had watching TCU. And Cal last night on offense.
Yeah, you know, I got home last night after work. I was exhausted from my trip. I figure I'll watch a little bit of whatever that bowl's called, the Cheez-It Bowl. I wasn't that bored. I watched it for a little while, but there was only so much I could take of that game.
Well, as you would imagine, there was some live wagering going on in the Kazarian household, so we were rooting for a lot of things going on in that game.
Yeah. Well, hopefully you're rooting for a lot of turnovers, because from what I saw, there was a lot of turnovers. Also, Gary Patterson punted on 4th and like an inch.
Oh, it was one chain link.
Yeah.
It was one chain link.
I don't even know what to say to that. I mean, how many times can I make the same joke? I guess I'll make it again. Kicking is for losers.
Yes, I mean, sir. I did the drop right over you.
What the hell is he doing?
I will say.
I like Gary Patterson. Gary Patterson's a good coach. I don't know what he's doing.
I will say, if it were a yard and not one link, I would have been in a 7-0 game, because they end up getting the ball back and scoring. So
right. it worked.
If all the games that it would be somewhat justifiable, it would be a 7-0 game. Like, it would be that game would be the but the one link, I mean, I don't even know how you cannot get it. You just take the snap and fall forward, and it's not like the referee can spot it anywhere but forward.
Yeah, just don't let the defense get set. Just rush up to the line and do a quarterback sneak, fall forward, first down, new set of downs, go from there.
But I will say this. Let's say they get the first down, and then, like, what? Then what? Like, there's no guarantee they're going to go forward the next set of downs.
I can't disagree with that, but I still thought it was just a ridiculous decision by Gary Patterson. And another kicking is for losers moment, but really not that many people were blowing it up on Twitter this time. I think they probably fell asleep trying to sit through that game.
Yeah.
So I don't blame them.
I agree.
It was brutal.
All right, let's move forward to the picks coming up. Sharp action as we get rolling here, as we're taping this on the Thursday the 27th here. What do we got moving forward?
This afternoon in the Bronx, New York, the big Pinstripe Bowl between Miami and Wisconsin. We saw some sharp money come in on Wisconsin +4 in this game. Now, that number's all the way down to 2.5. That group took Wisconsin, despite a very disappointing year for Wisconsin, really. And then I'll give you another one that's also later tonight, the Texas Bowl. This group took Vanderbilt. They laid 3.5. Vanderbilt's now a 4.5-point favorite against Baylor.
Yeah, I see the total has gone up. It's 57 at the Mirage. You guys have 56.5. I had to do 3 picks on SportsCenter this morning. One of them I gave out is over 55.5, so I feel a little good there with the total ticking up.
Yeah, and there was some sharp action over 55.5 here at the Superbook. We're at 56.5 right now.
All right, so that makes me feel a little better. All right, moving forward, so that covers today's action. What about the rest of the bowling season?
Well, tomorrow you've got the Camping World Bowl, and I think it's well documented. The Syracuse-West Virginia game, that line changed a lot. News of certain players sitting out for West Virginia, specifically the quarterback Will Grier. That number was as high as Syracuse +7. Syracuse is now a 1.5-point favorite in that game against West Virginia. Also tomorrow night, Alamo Bowl. We saw a sharp group take 3.5 on Iowa State. Iowa State now a 2.5-point underdog against Washington State. It's really one of my favorite coaching matchups of the whole bowl season. Matt Campbell of Iowa State against Mike Leach of Washington State. Leach probably my favorite coach in all of college football.
Yeah, now that goes back to even the game we were talking about with Miami and Wisconsin. If the sharps are on a certain number, yeah, it's a lot different. Like if they're on whiskey plus four, that's a lot different than taking 2.5.
Absolutely. We saw that in the Bahamas Bowl last week. There were some really sharp groups went under 68.5 in that game. That total got all the way down to 59, and there were people trying to chase that number. I think it landed 66 or 67 because of a long touchdown pass on the last play of the game.
Yeah, awful, awful beat for those people who took
horrendous,
the under that day.
But the really sharp groups, they were in there at 68, 68.5, and they won anyway, although it took a miracle for those other bettors to not win. The people that got – well, there are people that went under 64, 63.5 after the move. Didn't get as good of a move as the true wise guys, but they should have won too, I think.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. All right, bud, what else you got for us? Just fire away.
I'll skip ahead to New Year's Eve, the Military Bowl. Virginia Tech has been a team that's seen a lot of sharp action, +6 against Cincinnati. Also Pitt, +6.5 against Stanford in the Sun Bowl. That's a play we've seen a lot of action on. I'm sure you guys want to talk about the college football playoff too.
Yeah, I think so too.
But let me give you the New Year's Day stuff as well. I think we talked about it already, but Washington, +7 against Ohio State in the Rose Bowl, for sure is a play that's seen some sharp money. And also Georgia. The Georgia line opened around this neighborhood of 13. It got as low as 10.5. Sharp groups started coming in laying 11, 11.5, 12. Georgia's up to a 13-point favorite in the Sugar Bowl. That game's on New Year's Day that evening. But
yeah,
we can
like
talk about the college football playoff. We can talk about the college football playoff. You guys, I know that's what everybody wants to talk about, and I can understand why. But really, other than we've seen some sharp money on Clemson, and that Clemson number's been pushed up to 13. It got as low as 11 here, or 11.5 here, I should say.
What number did the sharp money come in on there?
12 was where we saw most of the sharp money. 11.5 and 12, I should say. As high as 12. It got as high as 13.5. There was a little bit of resistance there at 13.5. It settled at 13. You know, the Orange Bowl has been interesting. We opened this game, Alabama -14, right after the college football playoff matchups were announced. We haven't moved that number once. We've been at 14 the entire time.
That is remarkable, but I imagine once Saturday arrives, what kind of movement do you think we'll see with both lines, if at all?
I think the Notre Dame line will come down a little bit. I can't imagine it going over 13. That would really surprise me. And then I've said this all along, but I do expect both of the money lines to come down a little bit. The ticket counts are heavily in favor of the underdog on straight bets on both of the dog money lines here. And certainly, as you can imagine, most of the money is on the over in both of the games here.
But sharp money is not weighed in on either totals?
The total in the Alabama game got pushed up to 81.5. And then we saw some sharper groups starting to come in and move the number back down. And now it's all the way back down to 77.5. My guess is the public is going to be happy to bet over that number. I wouldn't be surprised if it ended up going back up on Saturday.
Interesting. What about you and your own opinion and the guys behind the counter? What do you guys, when you guys chat about these two games, what's been said?
There's not a lot from me personally. I mean, I made Clemson 13 and I made Alabama 14. I don't know what I could really say about these games. I mean, you know, I'm frequently wrong about college football lines. I'm not acting like I'm always right, but I can tell you these two playoff games are exactly what I made the number when we sat down that day, that Sunday when they announced them. We opened the Cotton Bowl a little lower because some of the other guys in the room had lower numbers than me. But me personally, this is exactly what I thought both of the games should be. I don't really have much to say.
How do you feel about the Alabama team total over?
The Alabama team total over? I mean, Tua, what's his health situation like? I mean, you go over 45.5, you pretty much need to score almost every possession to get there.
Really?
Now, Alabama's fully capable of that. I guess the one thing you would have going in your favor is Oklahoma's got an offense that's so explosive that they could score so quickly that it wouldn't take much time off the clock for Alabama to get the ball right back.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that's the safest bet of kind of everything for me. I mean, this is my personal opinion. I've ridden the Alabama train all season, first halves, everything. Yeah. I just think they're a machine. And, you know, Tua got hurt in the first quarter. Everyone forgets that. Tua got hurt in the first quarter against Georgia, stayed in the game, and then got hurt again in the second half, and that's what forced him to leave the game. But this guy was hobbling around, and Georgia's obviously a much better defense than what the Sooners have.
We expect Alabama to really run the ball a lot in this game, not only because Tua's hurt, but also because Oklahoma has shown no ability to stop the run all season. They showed no ability to stop the run in the college football playoff last year. Yep. Georgia was running for about 10 yards a carry in that game. So I think Alabama is going to keep the ball on the ground, keep the clock moving, keep Kyler Murray on the sidelines, and I don't see any way that Oklahoma can stop them from running the football.
Nobody has ever bet enough on a winning horse.
Rushing the ball against Oklahoma is a winning horse.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. And anything you can do to keep Kyler Murray on the sidelines, I think, is good for you if you're Alabama.
So in terms of ticket count, you alluded to it earlier. What kind of percentages are we looking at here?
For the money line, it's almost exclusive. I mean, you're talking about over 95% on the two dogs, although the favorites are being included in a lot of money line parlays. I mean, we're only talking about straight bets. It's at least 95% on the dogs. Now, in terms of the point spreads, both of the dogs are getting more of the money. Oklahoma is about 65% of the tickets. Notre Dame's more like 70% of the tickets. So the dogs are getting a lot of play here. It doesn't surprise me that much, but I do expect there to be a lot of support for the two favorites come Saturday.
Why is that? Just because the public likes to and they're going to be coming into town?
The public will be in town. I expect a lot of Alabama-Clemson parlays, for sure. I think we'll get a lot of that. But there's going to be a lot of straight bet action on the two dogs. I mean, people are going to want to take Oklahoma at 9-2 on the money line. They'll be much more inclined to do that than they will be to lay 650 on the Crimson Tide.
What big wagers have you taken on these games?
We've taken a few big parlays. There was a guy that parlayed Oklahoma and Clemson for, I think, 19,000, either 19,000 or 16,000. I thought that was an interesting one. And there was a $10,000 bet on Notre Dame money line that I mentioned, I think, on last week's show. Four to one. And there's been a few five-figure bets just on the sides and on all the teams. But certainly the majority of the big money is going to come in this weekend.
Will these be the most heavily bet national semifinals of the college football playoff era?
I don't know about that. I mean, I don't see them being noticeably bigger bet than, say, Ohio State Clemson, if you remember that game. That was like a pick'em game. That was a huge bet game.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know that these games are going to be more heavily bet than that game was.
I mean, nothing could.
And Alabama Clemson. I'm sorry. Alabama Clemson last year. That was the second semifinal last year. That was probably the most heavily bet of all the college football playoff games so far.
I was just wondering because Notre Dame's involved now. You know, and you got Alabama brand name as well, Clemson, OU.
Oh yeah, these two games are all going to be really heavily bet. I don't know that they're more so going to be more bet than the two games last year. Oklahoma Georgia was a very heavily bet game, and Alabama-Clemson was just huge. But there's a certain growth that you get every year, expected growth every year. You expect to write more than you did the previous year.
What else you got for me on these games? Were you good on covering all that, you think?
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much everything I wanted to talk about in terms of sharp action so far. There's a little bit of sharp action on Arkansas State. Had a group take them pick against Nevada. That game is also on Saturday. Possibly we'll get lost in the shuffle when the Notre Dame-Clemson game kicks off.
Yeah, no doubt. How do you stand in terms of the futures market? Any liability? What are we looking at?
The only team we lose on right now is Notre Dame, and we're actually in really good shape on the other three teams. We tried to stay ahead of the curve on Alabama the whole way. So we should be – I think we're in a pretty good spot. I don't see any way Notre Dame can win both of these two games, and for Notre Dame to beat Clemson and then beat Alabama, I just don't think that's possible.
I have 50-1, if you might remember correctly. Remember?
Yeah.
That.
Oh. No, I'm not saying it's impossible. I don't see it. I think Alabama and Clemson are just a cut above everybody else. I'm not like picking on Notre Dame specifically. Like I made the comparison when we talked a few weeks ago that Clemson reminds me of the 2017 Cavaliers.
Yep, loved
where
it.
They're a team that probably wins the championship almost every season, just like the 2017 Cavaliers would have won the NBA almost every year. They just happened to peak when Kevin Durant joined a 73-win team. so they lost. And that's kind of how I look at this Alabama team.
Okay, let's talk a little UFC and NBA coming up. But first, a word from one of our sponsors. Gentlemen, New Year's Eve is right around the corner. Treat yourself or a loved one to a brand new suit. Indochino is expanding into casual clothing with made-to-measure chinos. Indochino is North America's leading made-to-measure menswear company. They make suits and shirts to your exact measurements for an unparalleled fit and comfort. Guys love the option to personalize the details, including your lapel, lining, pockets, buttons, and writing your own monogram. Here's how it works. Visit a stylist at a showroom and have them take your measurements personally, or measure at home yourself and shop online at Indochino.com. Choose your fabric inside and out. Choose your design customizations. Submit your measurements with your choices. Relax while your suit gets professionally tailored and mailed to you in a couple of weeks. And then just watch as the compliments roll in. 2018's lowest prices, up to 70% off everything. The theme is all about stepping out from backstage, make an entrance, take center stage, your biggest moment, grand finale, etc. This week, listeners can get any premium Indochino suit for just $359 at Indochino.com when entering Behind the Bets at checkout. That's 50% off the regular price for a made-to-measure premium suit. Plus, shipping is free. That's Indochino.com, promo code Behind the Bets for any premium suit for just $359 and free shipping. Incredible deal for a premium made-to-measure suit. All right, back with John Murray here on the Behind the Bets podcast. Murray, I know what you're not doing Saturday night, and that's not going to UFC 232 in Las Vegas. What on earth?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. You know, I had a ticket to that event, and tickets to that event on Saturday night. It was supposed to be at T-Mobile, and they announced on Sunday that they were moving the entire event to the Forum in California because John Jones wasn't cleared by Nevada Athletic Commission. California said they would clear him, so they moved the whole event. I mean, I think it's just a ridiculous decision by the UFC. I don't know how else to say it. They're basically saying they don't care at all about their fans. They don't care at all about the gate. The only thing they care about is the pay-per-view units sold.
It is pretty remarkable when you think about it, what they're doing. And because it was one substance was banned in Nevada gaming, or not Nevada gaming, Nevada Athletic Commission, but not in California, and that's why?
They're saying that it's not a new usage, that they found traces in his system from a previous test, the test that he failed in the summer of 2017. One article I read said that the amount found in his system is equivalent to 1/50 millionth of a grain of sand. But the bottom line is that Nevada would not let him fight, and instead of just scrapping the Jones-Gustafson fight and going ahead with the event, the UFC opted to move the entire card to L.A. It's just not fair to the fans. I mean, for me, it's not that big of a deal. I live in Las Vegas. I just can't go to the fight anymore. But imagine if you were somebody that planned a trip to Las Vegas to go to the fight.
Remarkable. Any money line, any betting lines change because of this?
No, we refunded all the bets because our house rules say that the fights must be, the event must take place within the geographic location. Los Angeles and Las Vegas are not the same geographic location, so that's a refund.
No,
and then we had to reopen up the betting on all the fights with a different header, Inglewood, California on them, and the prices all remained relatively the same. And honestly, there hasn't really been a lot of action on this card yet.
Really? Interesting.
No, not really. I mean, there's a few parlays in there, the two favorites, John Jones and Chris Cyborg, but for the most part, it's been very slow betting on this event.
How was the handle on Christmas Day with the NBA?
It was pretty good. Unfortunately for us, we had a guy that had done a big parlay on the Raiders from Monday night against Denver to the Los Angeles Lakers.
Ooh.
On a Sunday evening.
Ooh.
I think he bet $7,500 on that parlay, and it paid close to $50,000. So that was it was something like that. It was a great hit for that guy. Christmas present for that guy. That was some effort from the Warriors, just getting waxed on their home floor by the Lakers.
How's the book perceiving the Warriors? Because they have the second worst record against the spread this year. I believe it's 14-20, behind only the Washington Wizards.
Yeah.
And just, I mean, it's been remarkable how many 20-point losses they've had.
My take on them is that they're just going through the motions and they're not paying any attention to the regular season whatsoever. I still think they've got the horses to win the championship. I fully expect them to win the championship, but that was a pathetic effort on Tuesday. I mean, they were getting blown out with LeBron in there. LeBron gets hurt, and you think, okay, they're going to win now. LeBron's out of the game. And they just continued to get blown out.
Well, they cut it to two. They did.
Yeah, they cut it to two, but then the Lakers still ran away. I mean, it's just
– Steph got a cheapy call. Steph got a cheapy foul call, and then they had to take him out with his fourth, I think.
I was full disclosure, I was actually flying back here. I was following the game online, but I wasn't able to watch it. But I saw the Lakers up by like 16 or 17, and then everybody on Twitter said LeBron's hurt, and I figured, okay, now the Warriors are going to win. And they rallied, but they could never take the lead, and then they just quit.
Yeah, it was a weird game, but I basically like the Lakers aren't afraid of them. I did a hit for VSiN with Windy City Sam.
Oh, nice.
And he asked me if I had to pick two futures in the NBA, non-Warriors related, who would they be? Obviously, the payout matters. And one of mine was actually Lakers at 20-1. You guys had the Lakers at 20-1.
Yeah, I think the Lakers are certainly ahead of schedule for where we expected them to be. I think, what are they, 20-14 right now? LeBron is playing awesome, of course, and some of the younger guys are developing a little bit more rapidly maybe than we expected, and they've got a little bit more depth than we anticipated.
Right. And the guys like Rondo and McGee are playing much better than I thought they would.
Yeah, me too. And really, I think the Lakers are semi-dangerous, but I don't see how they could win a championship this season. But I also said I didn't think there was any way that Cleveland could win the East last year with that ridiculous roster they had.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, if you look at the supporting cast LeBron has this year versus last year.
Oh, it's much better this year. It's not even remotely close.
That's my point. Like, are we forgetting how amazing LeBron can be in a playoff? I mean, the guy can score at will and then obviously set up all his teammates. Look, I'm just trying to make a case for 20-1, not to be the favorite.
LeBron is also going to be 34 next week. I feel like we say this every year, but this guy has to eventually slow down.
No, he does not.
Maybe not. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
Well, he does have an injury.
Certainly, I think a little hamstring tweak will be good for LeBron to give him some time off. I don't understand why the Lakers were playing him in all these back-to-back situations. I think they should be resting him with an eye towards the spring and a potential playoff run.
This injury, and when LeBron said he dodged a bullet, it reminded me of Dennis Miller back in the Monday Night Football booth when, obviously it was a prepared joke, but they said he's back from a minor groin injury, minor groin surgery. He's like, I don't know. Anytime you get a knife near that region, it's not minor.
Yeah. Well, they were saying that the MRI came back clean. I think they're just holding LeBron out as a precaution tonight against the Kings. But, you know, the West is so much deeper than we expected it to be. Pretty much every team in the West has got playoff aspirations except for Phoenix.
And that brings me to a question I have for you, and it was a tweet I made. I was looking at some of the futures because I was trying to answer the question from Windy City Sam. And you guys have some odds you've offered. And is 10,000 to 1 the largest odds you can offer?
I don't know that the system we can go to 50,000 to 1.
Okay.
I think that's what we have the Suns at right now to win. Oh no, maybe it is 10,000 to 1.
Yeah,
10,000
so
to 1 for the title, 50,000 to 1 for the 5,000 to 1 for the conference. I don't know if it can go higher than
that. So yesterday I looked and I tweeted this. Cavs, Knicks, Hawks, Bulls and Suns are all 10,000 to 1 right now. So not entering the season, but have you taken any bets within the last couple of weeks on these two teams?
Not in the last couple of weeks, but we have a huge liability on the Cavaliers from before the year. There was a lot of people that were speculating LeBron might re-sign with them.
Right.
So the Cavaliers are actually
50-1 or whatever it was.
The Cavaliers are our worst case scenario. You know what? I just clicked on it. There have been a few people that bet $5. One guy bet $5 on the Cavaliers on December 23rd. So that was nice of that guy to give us $5. Hey, after the NFL, 10,001. After the NFL results, we can use the $5.
Oh, so the NFL did not go well.
No. Yeah, you know what? There's another guy bet the Hawks at the same price also on the 23rd. So I guess people do make bets for $5 at these numbers. It's very generous of them.
It's Christmas.
So, Kai, did you get out to Vegas this week? I didn't realize that.
Yeah, it's just I think it's silly, but I mean, if people want to do that, they're always welcome to. That's why we have the betting available for that sort of thing. But you know, the NBA is the sport where it's the hardest to win as a long shot out of all the major sports.
I'm stunned. I just had to tweet that out because it actually got a lot of run. That I just think that's insane. I don't see how anyone can. Now, I would say the Lakers, part of the reason they're worth a flyer, maybe at 21, because they can make a trade before the deadline. But it's not like anyone's going to the Suns and they're going to make it win at all.
You know, the Suns are a team that a lot of sharp guys liked before the season. And it's just shockingly disappointing season for that team so far. I know Devin Booker's
they covered last night. Well, yeah, when Booker was there, but they covered last night. They're a frisky team. I had them against the Wizards when John Wall did not play. I think it was Saturday. Mm-hmm. And catching 5.5, went to triple overtime. And then I faded both teams the next night. One cashed, and the other one gave up like a 14-0 run to end and not cover by a hook.
Yeah, they were a team that we thought was going to be a lot more competitive. I'm not saying I thought the Suns were going to win anything this year, but I thought they'd be much improved from a year ago, and it just hasn't been the case at all.
All right, man, so we covered a lot. That was really good info. Glad you're back safely in Las Vegas. Sorry you do not get to watch UFC in person this weekend, but we'll talk a little NFL on the other podcast, but have an awesome weekend, my man, and Happy New Year.
Yeah, I'll be all right. I'll go out to a bar, I'll watch the Orange Bowl, and I'll watch the UFC, but the UFC, I think, just really letting their fans down. Again, I'm not the real victim. The real victims are the people that planned a trip here, booked hotel rooms, booked flights, only to have Dana White decide 6 days before the event, hey, let's do it in L.A. instead. It's ridiculous.
Well, it is what it is. So, yeah. All right, buddy. Have a good weekend. Enjoy all the games, and we'll check back with you next week.
All right, fellas.
All right, thanks to John Murray and Phil Steele. Obviously, a ton of bowl games coming up. Any confessions of a non-gambler, Kai? I know we were pretty clean, but anything come to mind there?
No, I always save them for the NFL show, but I do have a confessions of the non-gambler pick of the week,
promised
in the open. And, I mean, no surprise, I think I'm going to roll with the luck of the Irish also and pick Notre Dame to knock off Clemson.
Okay, and taking the points there, plus 13?
Yes, sir.
But do you like them to win outright? You said knock off.
No. I like them to... I like them to win outright.
Oh, win outright. So the money line as well. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. I think the luck of the Irish is going to strike.
Dicey move. So you not just keep it within the number at plus 13. You like them on the money line.
Yes.
Good for you. All right. Any is that a money line Marv play or?
No. I haven't heard from money line Marv. Okay. He needs to chime back in, especially for the national championship. We need
I'm sure he will. All right, bud. Happy New Year to you. I know we got the NFL pod as well to do, but good fun this season, 2018, and obviously exciting stuff with 2019. Be safe. You'll be certainly getting a lot of gifts with the contributions from the Baby Bankroll Bonanza over the NFL pod, but good run, man.
Oh, yeah.
All right, thanks to you, Kai. Thank you. Thanks to you, and thanks to Phil Steele, and thanks to Mr. Director John Murray. We'll catch everyone back here in 2019.
Thanks for listening to Behind the Bets. You can listen and subscribe on the ESPN app or download and listen on Apple Podcasts.